Hello again, friends. Welcome to My Back 40 and the My Back 40 podcast. I'm your host, Steve O'Shaughnessy. How are you? It's been a minute. I've had a very busy last couple of weeks out of town being in service to someone really special to me. I think I've found I think that's something as you maybe age a little bit, you realize the things that fill you up and the things that lead to a more happier existence. And I think that about me is just doing shit for people, you know, that are close to me, people in my orbit that I can help in any way I can. And I think the struggle I have is when I can't, it stings. It cuts deep when I'm unable to do that. So I work really hard to try to be in service of the people who are directly in my orbit. And, the people I chat with, I've talked about this circle of men mostly that I'm, I keep in touch with, and it's just such a fulfilling part of my existence and what makes My Back 40 so special. So I got deep fast, hey, this week. but I wanted to actually start by just thanking everyone. I've been posting a little bit about a free t-shirt giveaway. I don't know if this is going to be out before or after. I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants this week trying to get a podcast out. We've got two conversations in the can. Sorry, that's the wrong word. Not in the can. I've got two conversations recorded, unedited, etc. Ready to go out soon. It's just finding the time to put the piece together. So, leading into that, I wanted to thank some new Patreons who joined the My Back 40 community. And, I'm always a bit reluctant giving people's full names. I don't know if that's fair because, I'm not going to reach out to everyone and ask them all the time, but I know I see it online, people posting their entire Patreon list. And if that's something that you'd like, and that's a recognition piece, maybe I should be reaching out for consent to these people for that. But I just feel like, I want to just use first name on that stuff. I want to thank Colin, Kelton, and Ron for signing up to be patrons to the My Back 40 community. And when I started My Back 40, I didn't know where I was going to go. I had no plans. I didn't know what I really wanted to create. I just know I wanted to let my intuition follow me, or my curiosities follow me around, or guide me, rather, is the word. So that's kind of what I've been trying to do. And the response has been great. I'm a dire, avid cyclist to the end. Excuse me. I was thinking the other day, of all the change that has happened in my life and the things that I do, the foods that I eat, the people I surround myself with, it's constantly changing and constantly, what's the word? Just trying to surround myself with really good people. Really try to be mindful about the people I surround myself with. I don't really have time for anybody else. They've got to be quality, and I've got some great quality people in my life right now. but just trying to let my curiosities guide me to what I want to talk about week to week. And trying to talk about the same shit all the time. They tend to talk about the same stuff. I feel like I do. And, when that's kind of the whole thing's shadowed with imposter syndrome, sometimes I hold back about talking about certain things. But just the last couple of weeks have been really busy and so fulfilling, so fucking fulfilling. I don't know, it's hard to find your purpose or your purpose and meaning in your life. I find it, it's just this constant striving. That's my experience. No one has the same experience. But when you finally come up across something in your personality that you just feel like, yeah, this really lights me up. I just want to help people and be in service to people. That came up for me this week. So I want to talk a bit about that. Excuse my throat clearing. I don't edit. It's funny, when I first started the podcast, I edited a lot. I went in a lot. I used to remove my incessant throat clearing or sniffing or stuff like that. It's just what it is. It's just who I am. I want it to be as organic as possible, as long as I'm not like offending anyone with my physiological noises. But yeah, I want to thank Colin Kelton and Ron again for joining. And the folks that sign up get early access to podcasts. So this is another reason why I wanted to get an intro recorded, so I can get some stuff out to you guys right away. Guys and girls and people. And it just helps. And I also, you know, I've published a couple other chapters in the last couple of weeks of the audiobook Divide by Two Wheels by Michael J. Devitt. I'm having a blast doing that. But again, finding the time to do it. I don't know if I could actually sit down in an 8-hour day and record an entire book like that. It'd be really hard. It'd be very mentally taxing. It's a long process. It's not like just standing there reading a book. I think for every 10 to 15 minute chapter, which edited down becomes, you know, 10 or 15 minute listen, it's got to be an hour and a half at least. And I'm doing it on the fly. I don't have anyone helping me. So I'm like, I might read a sentence or a paragraph if I can get through that. Stop, go back, edit, change timing, and all sorts of stuff. It's very time consuming. So for people to join my Patreon and to support that effort, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that you're finding value in my Back 40. So I feel like I'm super mushy today. But anyway, I just wanted to thank you three, and for all my entire community. Just thanks for continuing the support. I know that my podcast have kind of ebbed and flowed a lot lately in terms of timing. But I just do it as time dictates, and hopefully it still becomes meaningful for you. So what else do I want to talk about? Oh, yeah, I was like, so I work for the Columbia Valley Greenways Trail Alliance. They're a not-for-profit trail plan construction sustainability group here in Invermere. And they basically were responsible for the for project managing the West Side Legacy Trail here. So part of my job is to go and collect media, you know, go out and collect videos and whatnot. And it's really interesting. There was this study a while ago about... you know what? I'm going to go there because that's going to be super judgy. But man, wave to each other when you're out there. Cyclists, come on. Like, yeah, I'm not an e-biker. I'm a mountain biker, bike packer. I'm not a roadie. I don't have a gravel bike yet. I'd love to have a gravel bike. I don't ride drop bars, you know, but I'm riding a fucking bike. Let's have some respect for each other. It's just so interesting out there. There's this demographic divide, and you can feel it in between certain cycling groups. And I think it's so lame because we're all out there doing the same thing. I don't care if you ride a fucking e-bike or a folding bike, or I don't care what you ride. Just you're out there riding, you're out there enjoying nature. And despite having what size of wheel you have, or what width of wheel you have, or whether you have a fucking motor or not, or drop bars or funky Jones bars, those are people don't recognize, you know, that's a pretty tight community of people who recognize a Jones bar when they see it, or any type of, you know, bike packing, long distance, long hauling bar. But like, we're all on the same team. And it's just funny. Some of the interesting things I sense between demographics, and like I'm constantly stopping and talking to people, and that's me. I'm not being too judgy, and it's not everybody. It's just a select few people in certain demographics that are very. There's a pattern to their friendliness, I guess, for lack of a better word. And it's not just here. It's not just here. It's everywhere. You know, I've ridden everywhere, and I haven't ridden everywhere, but. Places I've been, like say on when there's some sort of community trail, there's certain demographics of people that just, I don't know, they just think their shit don't stink. And you know, it all stinks. So be nice, wave to one another, stop and talk to one another. Cause man, I would dig talking to a roadie and get him all lit up talking about his gear or how long he's been riding, whatever. I love that. Cause I love seeing people lit up about what they're doing. That's why I do this, you know? Yeah, so that's something I noticed. That's one thing I wanted to talk about. I have a list on my phone. I'm just kind of thinking of a couple topics that came to mind. I guess the next thing I'll say, you know, I've been feeling a lot of, what's the word? Comparing myself to other people lately. You know, I'm not going to go on about it, but I'm getting a new hip, and that was hard to take. And that slowed me down a lot over the last 5 years. It's been this subtle, slow decline of strength, fitness, and mobility that's really been holding me back, despite all the work I do to stay fit and to stay active and to stay mobile. And it's really been holding me back. So when I see people out there and I compare myself or trying to keep up to, you know, my buddy Jordy here, right? Like we used to be able to ride like almost shoulder to shoulder, and now I'm chasing that fucker through the woods. Jordy, I love you, man. Should go for a ride again soon. But it's just funny how, and I feel it. I think I got, what do I have on you, Jordy? Like 10 years on you. So that's kind of kicking in. I get called old man sometimes and I'm dealing with this hip thing, but I'm a fucking athlete, and it's tough when you're feeling incapable. I've received some messages from some of the other dudes I talk with a lot, and there's been a little bit of that, a little bit of like, oh man, you know, I used to be able to, you know, front mid pack or, you know, I used to be able to keep up with that dude. Now I can't, or it's a bit of a struggle and recovery sucks and aches and pains and all this stuff starts happening. So we kind of look to the past and remember how things were, you know, like for me, the 40s were awesome. Like what a great year the 40s were, a great decade the 40s were. But it's like, I've said this before. It's like there's this switch and you on your 50th birthday, it's almost like this switch gets thrown. It's like, that's weird. That didn't hurt. That didn't hurt before. Man, it's really hard to get out of bed. My recovery sucks. And it just seems to like, it's a bit of a reminder of your mortality. You know, I've been kind of thinking a bit about mortality lately too. And it's like something, I haven't had a lot of loss in my life. You know, I haven't had that. And I know people really close to me who have experienced a lot of loss and tragic loss. And to hear their stories and to hear them share their sorrows and their regrets, shoulda, coulda, woulda, said, whatever. It just made me think that how important it is to like, and you hear this fucking everywhere. I'm sure there's lots of self-help reels going out talking about this. It's like time is so fucking short, and we need to tell the people in our orbit the way we feel about them in the moment, and don't hold back. And that's all feelings. We need to be straight up and as honest with people as we can be. And yeah, if you're in my orbit and love is directed at you, you're going to get it all. You're going to get a lot of it, and you're going to get it right away. If I feel it, right. I don't have time for the other stuff. I don't have time, a lot of time for hate and resentment. And that's something I've really worked on trying to mitigate in my life, is just try to live day to day and try to offer. And I'm not really fucking bad at this shit. Just trying to be more compassionate and trying to be more understanding, you know, to everyone, my children, my ex, my girlfriend, my everybody, just everyone in my orbit, my family, my mom, my dad, my sister. It's just to try to show compassion, because it's so, fuck, we're not here long. And with the kids that live around here, where I live here in Invermere, it's like there's these beautiful kids and they're so pure, including mine. Like they're just these wonderful humans. And you can tell just that the small thing you might say to them, or, you know, I was at the school picking up my daughter and this other little girl who lives here runs up to me and gives me a hug, right? Steve, and she runs up and she's 4 or 5. Like, that's fucking beautiful. Kids, they show love, they show their feelings, right? And we lose that. We lose that ability over time because we're hiding behind, well, this, understandably, we're affected by our traumas, and we hold back because we've been hurt. We've opened up to someone in the past and they've just rejected us, right? Right away, like you, bam, they just slam you down, you know, not having it. And we've all experienced that, right? You just pick your ass up and move forward. And next time you have that feeling of love, I'm talking just about love right now. When you have that feeling, it's like, don't hold back, because you never know what expressing that feeling is going to be. and using that as using love as guidance through your life, right? Do things that you love. Do things for the people you love, for the community you love. You know, when you're doing that, you're going to be so lit up. I'm so lit up right now talking to you guys. And it's, I've said this before too. It seems like this, it's a one-way relationship. I pick up the mic, I talk into space, and that's it. But it's not, it's so fucking not it. And the feedback I get, and the comments I get, negative and otherwise, it starts a conversation. And if you don't like something that I put in a podcast, instead of just slamming me, reach out to me. Let's have a conversation about it. You know, and I don't get slammed that often. I posted that thing about the guy saying about Dean Anderson's post, right? Oh, I didn't know this was a religious podcast. Like, dude, come on. Like, what the fuck? It's like he's one of the most beautiful humans I've met. I've ever met. He's a beautiful man. He's a beautiful husband and a father and a beautiful community member, a beautiful athlete, talented, strong athlete who believes in a higher power. It's like, I don't fucking care. I don't care. He uses that to guide, it guides his life. It's the compass that he lives his life by. And I'm not religious, but maybe we all could use a bit of a compass like that, whatever that looks like for you. So I don't get that a lot. And you know what? Maybe I got a little bit touchy about that. maybe I just read it and I was just like, I just verbalized. It's like, really? Come on. Like, that's how you're going to judge my entire production, my massive production of 160 podcasts. anyway, wow, I went off a tangent there. Interesting. I think that's all I'm going to say right now. I don't know how deep I am. 16 minutes? That's not so bad. I want to thank my sponsors. I want to thank Dynamic Cyclist for one. If you haven't signed up for Dynamic Cyclist yet and you've wanted to, use the code MB40 to sign up. They've got an app. It's on your phone. You can do your exercise anywhere, 20 minutes a day. That's all you really need. Or 20 minutes, you know, three times a week. Do it when you can do it. But if you sign up, get a week free, a 7-day free trial. And then after that, you'll save 25% signing up. So do it. It's awesome. You won't regret it. Really wanted to highlight them. Hey, have you heard of Pink Weasel Coffee? Check out Pink Weasel Coffee on Instagram and give them a follow. I've been kind of a little bit involved in that project. It's been fun, just doing some cupping and tasting and talking about, you know, recipes and whatnot. And it's been really fun to get back in the coffee game again. And yeah, it's just been great. So check them out. They're not a sponsor of the podcast, but it's my buddy. It's my buddy Curtis, Spandex Panda. So check them out as well. Also, I want to talk about, obviously, Lakeside Bikes. You know what? Invermere's getting busy. Trails have dried up. Finally, people are coming out, and if you're coming out to ride, be patient. Lots of traffic, lots of bike racks in town. Those of you who go to Swansea, this probably won't be out by, well, it might be. If you guys go to, anyone goes to Swansea, they're asking people not to park on the mine road when you come out here. So right at the base, when the parking lot's full, it's been spilling out on the mine road, and it's dangerous. So they're recommending people, you know what, go ride elsewhere, come back later. It's a super busy spot in the spring here in Invermere. That's basically our DH, you know, enduro area. So it's up track and lots of wicked downhill. I don't spend a lot of time there, to be honest. The only bike I have is a single speed and a bikepacking rig. So I don't really spend a lot of time there. And also, I don't know. I think I'd rather do it on a squishy bike, which I don't have. But yeah, so just mind that if you can. When it's busy, find another place to ride. But what else is going on here? Lots of stuff. This podcast is with Nathan Siemens about the Lost Elephant coming up. Lost Elephant has had so much growth. How many times have I done it? Just twice. I think we talk about it in the podcast. But Nathan's a really, really great guy. He's such a passionate, lit up organizer for this bikepacking event. That's basically what he coined it the other day. It's dominated by women. Last year, I think the top five out of the top 10, five were women. I'm sorry, I don't have my list. I know Julia Halwa was there, Megan Hakkinen. See, I should know this. All these people. I'll look it up here, but I'll try to look it up. If anything, it'll be in the show notes. But yeah, there's just so much. I've talked about this for a handful of years, just how how women are dominating the sport, and it's, I think women have some advantage, I think. And what I always cite, and I'm not an expert at all by any stretch, is I think boys just have so much ego. We just have so much ego, and we let that ego guide us. It's like, it shouldn't be about the ego. It's not about the ego. It's been, it's so hard to put that aside. I don't think I'm an egotistical rider. I don't in that way. And I don't mean that like, kind of meaning I let my ego, you know, you hear it screaming at you. You're not good enough. You suck, you know, go harder. Or you're going to let that, what I remember talking to Janie Hayes years ago, the Bike Pack Canada podcast. And she would be from Salida, Colorado. And she said there, she had instances where she'd be, you know, climbing up some pass and pass a guy, and the guy would look and see her and go, "Ah, oh, I've just been chicked." It's like, who fucking says that? Who says that? It's so crazy to me. Yeah, you're just chicked because they're strong. they're just as strong as you are, if not stronger, in certain aspects, right? Like in all aspects, like strength and mental strength and tenacity and voraciousness. And women just kind of have it going on where, you know, that guy, I bet he lost a bit of his jam after Janie passed him. And that's what I mean by, you know, letting your ego guide you. If that made any sense at all. But yeah, so women are crushing these events, and last year's Lost Elephant was crazy, just how it all went down. And seeing all these women just dominate, it was just fantastic. So this year is going to be awesome again. You know what? I might be able to do it. Maybe the Dumbo. I don't know. Again, my hip. I don't know if I can do a big one or not. I might do a shorty, but we'll see. Figured maybe it'd be a fun one to pack light for and just kind of do it in a day. Just kind of keep plugging away at it. Maybe try to pull that off in 24 hours, 36 hours or something. I don't know. Take a lot of naproxen and acetaminophen to get through that for this guy. But anyway, I'm not going to get into it too much because we talk about a lot in this podcast, and it was a blast. So without further delay, I bring you of the Lost Elephant Ultra Race here in Cranbrook, BC, Nathan Siemens. We have to crank it up. You know, just put headphones on.
Yeah, I know, but then you get headphone fatigue. Headphone
fatigue. I think that's why my ears ring all the time.
Right.
I have tinnitus.
Oh,
I'm recording now.
Okay, it's just like, because mine are in-ear ones. It just feels like, oh, I'm tired.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, yeah. Eh? On the road trip, the kids would be connected to my hotspot, mm-hmm. and they have Bluetooth headphones, which was a total dad win.
Yeah.
Like, so they're in the back surfing on there. I gave them a couple devices while we're driving across BC, and it was just so quiet. I was like, this is awesome. So I put my headphones in, and we're just cruising. And
yeah, we actually just did that on the way to Calgary because Jen was doing, she's got a new job. And so she's doing a bunch of training stuff. Ilo was watching. Is it cake?
Oh, that's such a good show.
And so I'm just like, okay. So I just put in a podcast and was listening to that. It felt a little bit funny, like, cool family road trip. But it's great because we're all doing our thing. We're all there enjoying ourselves.
I really beat myself up about the screens.
Yeah.
Actually. And I've slacked off quite a bit. But I also, because I watched a shit ton of TV mm-hmm. growing up.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, especially on the road trip, it's like, sure, you don't. You know, the kids shouldn't be on screens. They should be looking mm-hmm. out the window. But it's like when we're on a road trip, like,
yeah.
or a flight, mm-hmm. we'd watch a movie for 2 exactly. hours. Like, yeah. we're going to be entertained with a screen the whole time.
Yeah.
And it made it, because as soon as like we were in a dead zone and there was no signal, and I would say, sorry, guys, no signal, or I'd turn it off to give them a break.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, no signal. But as soon as the headphones came off and the devices went down, mm-hmm. the level of bickering started to go up and up and up. And I'm like, oh, we got signal again. And then it would be completely dead quiet.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah. All right.
Well, yeah. Well, thanks for coming up.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. It's nice to come somewhere else to get shown around.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I've been always wanting to go do that radium loop that I think it's talked about a bit up here. So
yeah, I mean, it's like I say, it's pretty mellow. When you talked about that you were bringing your single speed. Mine's still packed in the room. I don't know if it's roadworthy. But.
Yeah, mine's just a single speed because I take off all the drivetrain for commuting in winter.
Oh, yeah.
So my pink bike is just like, it's in my... It does a lot, that bike. So
yeah. That's your bikepacking bike.
That's my bikepacking bike, yeah.
Are you going to bikepack single speed?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's funny. I was going to do the Active Epica this year with its single speed because I'm like, well, it's out in the prairies. It's flat. It's ice. So as long as I have good tires, it should be great. But then the winds were predicted to be super crazy. So I was, but the whole winter I was riding like some good backcountry roads on it, single speed, you know, on icy roads. And I liked it a lot. But my main bike packing event this year is the Lost Elephant. And I don't know if you've looked at the elevation on it yet this year. It's bonkers.
So how many K and how?
It's shorter, 474 kilometers, but it's 10,200 meters.
That's only like a couple thousand more meters.
So, but I started doing the crunching the numbers on other ones. And I'm actually trying to downplay that the Lost Elephant's gnarly because it's sort of not. In a lot of ways, because it's not like technical single track. It's not like rugged that way. But I still haven't found another event this year. And I hope someone corrects me because I want to be corrected. That has more climbing per kilometer than the Lost Elephant, both the Dumbo and the Jumbo.
Right.
So it's Andrew found like every valley to go up and down. So,
so this year there's no bushwhacks.
That I can't confirm. I haven't.
Ah.
This is one of my favorite things that happened last year on the Elephant. I was riding with a guy, and we were riding along. I'm like, oh man, this section's really cool. I've never been here before. And he almost dead stopped. He looked over at me. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I've never been here.
Oh.
And he's like, yeah, you have. I'm like, no, I have never been here. And it was almost like I pulled the rug out from underneath him. He's like, but you're like the guy behind this event. I'm like, I've been trying to tell everyone I'm not necessarily the guy behind this event because there's always sections I've never ridden. So this new one, there's a lot of sections, but, Andrew sort of gave the goal for us to get out there and check a few of them because they should all work. So, there's one section.
This is Andrew McLeod, right?
Yeah. So there's just a couple sort of connectors that none of us have ever done before. So yeah, they're all going to work. Like I've actually pre-planned a bunch of like 40 to 80K rides just to go out there on a day and check them out. So yeah, but he's just found like, instead of going around the valleys, he's going up and over everything because there's easier ways around a lot of the things that are happening. But I think he really wanted to hit that 10,000.
Yeah.
And in fact, the fact that it's only 474 instead of like that 550 is a lot because he didn't want to go much more than 10,000. He liked that 10,000 number. He wanted to be right on it. So
I was just going to look up the Colorado Trail. I was just looking.
Yeah, that's one. Okay, I haven't looked up the Colorado Trail. I haven't looked up the stats on that. So, but that takes so much math because, anyways.
Oh, you mean because it's like a proportion you're looking at, right?
Yeah, you got to divide. I don't know. But the one that people talk about all the time is that Hope 1000 is it Switzerland?
I've heard of that, but yeah, I don't know where it is.
I know Lael had a video about it. And yeah, so that one, the Highland Trail. But the Highland Trail is like way gnarlier in its own way. So that's the thing. I guess I shouldn't have even said it because it's like comparison. You can't really compare them, right? One of them is going to be longer. One of them is going to have more technical single track. One of them, you're going to have to take your bike apart and walk across a canyon. So like in a way, events are not comparable, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like apples to apples.
Yeah.
But you can't really, it's hard to explain or it's hard to...
So
I'm trying to find a stat here.
Because, like, again, for local ones, the obvious two comparisons here are the BC Epic and Lost Elephant, but they're just worlds different.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're not even... No. Like, they're obviously the same activity, but yeah.
I credit riding the Lost Elephant to preparing me for everything because they're so hard. I always found the Lost Elephant. I mean, they're not so hard, but they're just, they're challenging.
Like, yeah.
Whether you're bushwhacking or pushing your bike for hours or technical descents.
Yeah.
Or, I think it prepared me because then you jump on the BC Epic, and I talk about the Epic a lot. I love the Epic.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty chill.
Yeah.
Right? The hardest part probably is the single track Trail Castlegar single track.
Yeah. Which is cool.
Which is cool, but it's hard.
Yeah.
And Great Creek Pass, which is just a...
Well, Great Creek Pass is... Yeah, it's just a climb.
Yeah. But even on the divide, like it doing these short, extremely challenging races like Lost Elephant, I think just prepare you for... Right. Or just the Colorado Trail. If someone goes and rides the Colorado Trail and then goes and rides the Tour Divide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
like comparing the Epic to the Elephant.
Yeah.
It's like that.
Well, I remember... a friend of mine had done the Tour Divide and then did the Elephant sort of the year after, I guess it must have been. And he kept saying, "Oh, it didn't get this exciting on the Tour Divide. Oh, didn't get this adventurous on the..." He kept like referring to that. And I was like, that's sort of funny. But it was always when we were like, had our bikes on our shoulders. Because I don't know. Obviously, I don't know anything about the Tour Divide besides following it. But he's like, yeah, I never walked. So.
Well, I mean, other than maybe the wall. You climb
up
the wall.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's
funny.
My experience was that, you know, you read about these things. Like, you read about the wall and you read about Fleecer Ridge to name two things. And it's like, when I got to the wall, I was like, oh, it was much harder stuff than the Lost Elephant.
Right.
And it was hard
to
push your bike. It's only a couple hundred meters high. But it is, and it's not straight up.
Yeah.
But
the Tour Divide has Coco Claims.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So that's like Middle Kootenai Pass or you know, Brewer. Mm-hmm. It was similar to that.
Yeah.
You're just pushing your bike. Right?
Yeah, because that was like one of the exciting things about, I guess, the 2022 and 2023 Elephants. I only did the 2023. Was that I finally got to see this Coco Claims that everyone talked about.
Yeah, you guys went the other way, though, right?
Correct.
Yeah, you went
down.
Yeah,
we went down into Elkford. But the year before... Oh, no, sorry. Eric did it the other way. Eric went backwards that year. But I loved it. Loved it. I thought that was like one of my favorite parts.
Yeah.
It was just like... it changed things up. You're no longer on gravel.
Was there snow?
No. No, that was like... Because it was like late July.
Right.
Yeah. So it was hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
10-year anniversary.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I guess it's the 10th running of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I guess it's sort of funny because I think the first running was the 15th, or sorry, the 15th, 2015. Mm-hmm. And so it looks not like the 10-year when it's like 2015, now it's 2024. But yeah, it's the 10th time that it's run. And so, those first few were called the Kootenai Gravel Grinder. We've talked about that before. Yeah. And then it was just sort of like everyone was like, this isn't a gravel grinder. Because gravel grinders weren't a thing then. Like, it wasn't like an event, you know. Like, now there's gravel bikes and gravel racing. That didn't really exist. It's like, okay, we're on gravel road. So, but the ruggedness and the remoteness and all that... people were finally saying, this isn't like, you know, a day gravel grinder. So it got changed to Lost Elephant. And I'm going to give Andrew the naming credit on that one. Because, and then he also came up with the Dumbo and the Jumbo, which I think are really funny names. So
where does the whole Lost Elephant idea come from?
It's Cranbrook lore. There was a circus that came to town. And this is real. Like, it's Google it. So Cranbrook Ed and a bunch of other elephants, his name wasn't Cranbrook Ed until after this thing. So a bunch of elephants got away from the circus and like went off into the woods near Jim Smith Lake, which is a lake right near Cranbrook. And they were like gone for a while. They rounded up most of them, but Cranbrook Ed outwitted them for like 4 or 5 days and was living in the woods in and around Cranbrook. So we got like a statue of an elephant in Cranbrook. One of the breweries in town has like some elephant branded IPA, And so it's just a thing of Cranbrook.
That's hilarious.
And so, yeah, so it's funny because it's like, I just thought it was a genius name for it. It's like you can just picture the elephant trudging around in the woods, like just like what we're doing. And then the Jumbo and the Dumbo, just, we needed names for the shorter ones.
And all these animals of prey just looking at this beast going, oh, what is that?
But so one of my goals, and Andrew keeps shooting it down because apparently rivers run high and can't cross them and blah, 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 is to connect over to Kootenai Lake one year. One of my goals is to have the Lost Elephant touch Kootenai Lake, because in Kootenai Lake, they had a cheetah. There's also this photo of a cheetah on a beach in Kootenai Lake. And I'm like, that's really funny.
Like a wild cheetah or a pet cheetah?
A pet cheetah got away.
Oh, okay.
But no, since it's illegal to have a pet cheetah, no one claimed it, right? Like no one's like, oh, that's my pet cheetah, because you can't. Because they don't want to get in trouble for it. So now can you imagine just being out in the woods and hiking about in the dense backwoods of the West Kootenays and seeing a cheetah?
Is it, it's still alive?
Oh, no, this was like 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, fair.
Yeah, if you look it up, though, there's a photo of this cheetah drinking out of Kootenai Lake. It's like one of those grainy photos, but it's not like Sasquatch grainy. It's like, oh, it's true. No, no, it is true. And yeah, and so it made the news. It's like it was on national news and stuff.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. I didn't know about any of that stuff.
So yeah, people have asked about why, what's all the elephant stuff about, like, why is it all elephant focused? And that's it. Cranbrook Ed. Go down to, on Baker Street, there's a little statue of him by Cranbrook Photo.
I've never seen the elephant statue.
Yeah, so... Yeah, you wouldn't. You'd see it if you drove all the way through Cranbrook and kept going to Creston, because it is sort of like on the highway. But yeah, it's missable for sure.
Well, then that should be part of the race to go by there.
Well, it used to start downtown, but just logistically, it's a crappy place to start, especially now that there's more than one person on the start line.
Right.
So yeah.
We were talking about before it's always a challenge when someone comes here to talk, because it's like, I should have turned the mic on while I was making breakfast. Yeah.
Well, I've got to say, I was going to, I feel very special because here I am in your home getting fed breakfast.
Yeah.
I want to know how many other guests have gotten that treatment.
No one's gotten breakfast.
Nice.
Yeah. So nice. it's good first date.
So really I'm the best guest ever.
The best guest ever.
Yeah.
You're probably you might be the most hosted.
That's
the right word.
Yeah, maybe.
Three,
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
But one of them I was in the background just making noise.
It was funny that's the same piece of equipment I used. We're at Andrew's house.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were just all sitting around in the living room. I really enjoyed that, actually.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
We were talking about before we started recording was the, what's the word? I guess we were kind of leaning into liability a little bit.
Let's not lean into that.
Okay, let's not do that. But we're talking about how, you know, the logistics of planning these things can be really challenging for people.
And it's been on my mind a bunch, I guess. I'll start this off by saying I am not tired of this. I love it. In fact, just driving back from Calgary last night, my wife and I chatted about it quite a bit. And as we were chatting about it, my passion was evident. Like, it was quite clear that I like being involved in this. And, but yeah, I'm seeing it in the obvious example is the AR-700. That Jonathan Hayward, I don't know why, I don't question him in any way, but he's not running it this year. I'm sure it's for really good reasons, because I can understand that if you're running that by yourself, you'd get super burnt out. And then, so Andy Ward, Eric Ross, and I drove to Winnipeg this year. So 16 dudes, or sorry, three dudes, 16 hours in a car, just talking about bike stuff and event stuff. And one of the things Andy brought up that I thought was really good is that he thinks that the Lost Elephant probably has insurance built in that we have 4-ish people that care about it, that make some decisions. If one of us was just like, you know what, I'm over it, and walked away,
oh, I see.
It would keep going.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if I tomorrow was like, you know what, I'm done, I just don't want to do this anymore, I'm sure I could call up Eric and just say, hey, I'm done, here's the email list, do with it as you will. It would look different, it would sound different, it would whatever, but it would still go on. It would still be, there's still people that are passionate enough to throw their weight at it. And it's weird because it's, when I step back and look at it, it's not like a huge amount of work that goes into it. But if you're just doing it as a passion project, it's not a job, it's just for fun, for community building, whatever it is, it would be easy to get burnt out on it. But the enjoyment of not just, like, I love doing the event, like, sorry, participating in the event. So it's sort of a selfish endeavor there that I want it to go so that I can ride in it. But I also am loving the people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so Guy Stewart, I reached out to him to see if he wanted to be involved again with sponsoring with some product, and he's doing it. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just going to say, if you're looking for a place, I've got a place for you. Mm-hmm. So now Guy Stewart's going to be sleeping in my basement. And that's cool, because what do I know of Guy Stewart besides the fact that I rode with him for 45 minutes, maybe, on a buckshot in 5 years ago? And, like, I don't know him, but we've connected, right? Yeah. There's been so many people that I've connected with for moments here and there, but feel connected to. And so, and that was another thing, like doing, it came up a lot on our drive to Winnipeg with Andy Ward, that he was like someone I'd talked to 5 minutes, maybe. Like, he and I happened to be at the finish line at the same time. So
you and Guy?
No, me and Andy Ward.
Oh, right.
Because he did the, you know, he did the jumbo, I did the Dumbo, in about the same amount of time.
Right.
He just tacked on the extra 220 kilometers. But yeah, so I shared in his stoke in that moment.
Yeah.
The next year, I saw him at the start line, talked to him for maybe 5 minutes. Then he crashed out, and I said, oh no, Andy, are you okay? Yeah, I'm good. And that was our entirety of our conversations in our life.
Yeah.
And then I'm willing to jump into a car and drive 16 hours with him.
Right? Yeah, it's just that camaraderie, right? Yeah. It's, I think that's... we were talking about earlier as well about skateboarding, because we both grew up skateboarding, and I'm not as passionate about it, but it still had that same community. Like, you could go to another town, say when I grew up in Ontario, go to another town and meet some other skaters, and you could skate together.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
It's just because everyone just jives because we're all of the same mindset.
Yeah, there's like a shared... there's a shared dialect almost. Mm-hmm. There's a shared passion, like... you find a bike packer, you could talk for hours about footwear.
Yeah.
You could talk for hours about what their sleep setup is. And yeah, maybe you're not getting deep, but then all of a sudden it's 9 o'clock at night and the sun's starting to go down and you're riding side by side, and maybe you are talking deep and you've only met this person 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden one of you takes off up the climb and you never see them again, but you just shared that moment, and it's pretty great.
It is. It's special, right? Because it's, I think, encountering people like that on the trail in that context, because you're already so, depending on the time you meet that person, you're already so stripped down.
Yeah.
Either energy or mentally, or you could be having a bad day, or, and you meet someone and you just, to have someone to share in the suffering with, I think bonds you right away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, and more so than the 20 minutes. So like, the BC Epic that I finished was the 2021 one, which was the super, super hot one. The one that Megan won.
Right. That was yo-yo year for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So you experienced those temperatures. And,
I don't know how Megan did it. Well, I do know.
I can say we, because in my mind, that was a ride I did with these three other, three and a half dudes.
Oh, I remember. You guys really slowed down, hey, and then kind of stayed together.
And it was just so amazing, because I think we realized we weren't going to make it. Like, we would drop out. Maybe not. There's two guys. I guess I can only speak for myself. I guess I can't speak for them. But I think the fact that we stuck together made it so that we could keep going. And now we're like I went down to Powell River 2 years later, and one of the guys, Phil, lives on the island. So I'm like, hey, I'm here. He hopped on a ferry, came over. We went for a ride. He had dinner with us at our Airbnb, brought his wife over. And it was just great. Like, and Bastion, who's like, I don't even know where he lives, like Montreal and Paris. And he's this traveling tattoo artist guy. We back and forth, you know, enough that like, if he was here, we'd be best friends right away again. Yeah. And then Brad Smiley is the guy from Cranbrook. So I knew him already. But man, that bond over those 3 days was incredible. And yeah, we just sort of stuck together and helped each other through, which I was going to say helped each other through hard times, but really it wasn't hard times. We could have pulled the plug at any moment. We're self-inflicted hard times, but it was enjoyable because we're just, you know, watching each other put our chamois butter on.
There's an intimacy to. Do you want some, dude?
Yeah, you need
a scoop out of my. Oh, it's funny, like thinking about the AR. I remember when Jonathan posted that stuff, and then there was a few comments, and they were all like, just, you know, they were fine, respectful, but a lot of people were kind of disappointed,
right?
And I think I might have commented, it's like, go do it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, what's stopping you from doing it? Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's not a, you know, maybe there's not a website and there's not this and there's not that, but it's like, you know what, you can go line up at 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm. The route's still weekend. There.
Yeah. Yeah, go and ride it. You know, maybe that's how it'll go. Maybe that's how,
Well, I do know there's a group of people doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a group. And I think they're even doing it on the correct weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Like the same historical weekend that it gets done on. So
to figure out when that is, because I always have to align events with my parenting schedule now.
Yeah, talk to Darren Madley because he's planning on doing it.
What's Darren doing? He's a machine, man. Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
What's he gearing up for? Do you talk to him?
Well, I did because he was at the Active Epica as well,
right,
in Winnipeg. I don't know if this is, anyways, he has a big event every month this year.
Yeah.
A truly crazy thing. Like, he did that Fat Pursuit.
Yeah.
Then he did the Active Epica. Then he did the other one. Oh, I don't know. Some other winter ultra that took him like 30 something hours and was more walking.
Arrowhead? That's another. No. Is he going to do the ITI?
I don't know. I don't know. I've never heard that out of his mouth myself, but yeah. No, yeah, he is a machine.
Yeah, he's getting after it.
Yeah, just crazy.
His sights are set.
Yeah, so, yeah, he's got some big, big ones. I don't, that's for him to say, not for me to say.
Yeah, but of course.
Yeah.
I'll speak for
him. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, some big stuff that makes me like, wow, good for you.
I'd like to try to get down and do a Fat Pursuit. I think that'd be fun because I love it. And I did that 24-hour thing this winter, but I felt like I really failed the moisture management game.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Miserably. I failed it. And I don't know how to, I need some guidance on how to do that. I'm not venting correctly or overdressing or, you know, cause it's interesting. Like the lowest temperature I think was -19. And then during the day, I think it was sunny and it got fairly warm. It must've been well above zero, but to be able to, traverse terrain in those kind of temperatures and stay comfortable.
I know.
I didn't know how to do it.
Because, this year was my first quote-unquote winter ultra. And that's funny. It sounds very similar. It was -17 when we started and got up to +2. Yeah. But we, got into peanut butter mud for a second.
Oh, yeah, right.
It was weird. And I, apparently that race was a qualifier for the ITI. So if you've done that, then you're allowed to line up for the ITI.
Oh, just one?
No, it's one of the, you have to do two of them, things. But Andy said it afterwards, that did not prepare me at all because it was just like a long day ride.
Yeah.
Right? It was just
how far is it?
It's 230 kilometers.
Oh.
And it was super windy and there was adversity for sure, but it was not
-40.
No, and there was it was an amazing event because there was different warm up and refuel stations. I think the biggest gap you had was 56 kilometers. So it was Yeah, so it was like not, it was pretty chill that way. And the roads were pretty great. Like,
could you have ridden a skinny bike?
I did ride a skinny bike.
You did, right?
Yeah, I rode I rode on 2.2 Ice Spiker Pros.
Yeah.
It was super icy in parts, so I needed the studs.
But you didn't need any volume for snow or anything?
There was two sections I had to walk where all the fat bikers rode.
Yeah.
But I would not have won. I made the right choice that day, for me at least. Although Andy beat me by 4 hours or something like that.
He was on a fat bike?
And he was on a fat bike. So, but he also is a whole different beast.
He's Andy.
Yeah, so... But yeah, no, it was a fun event. There was four elephantitists there, so that was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the winter stuff, that's the other thing too. Like, you know, we were talking about elephant in relation to other routes and how it can set you mm-hmm. up. Like doing anything in the winter, I think, sets you up for success for almost everything. Because there's so much more adversity in the winter than there is in the summer.
Yeah.
Like,
I was carrying so much stuff.
Yeah.
Just
for 230K.
I know, and without a sleep kit, right? You're supposed to carry something, so I had like an emergency bivy.
Yeah.
But like just the amount of like layers you have to carry.
Yeah.
So you look at those ITI bike setups that they just look absolutely massive, but you can't not carry that much stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I was watching a thing with Rebecca Rush yesterday, just talking about how she packed for mm-hmm. her second ITI, I think it was. And it was just, there's so much shit on the table. It was like, oh my God.
And it just kept coming and coming. Yeah. I've watched that same video. That's.
And so. it's just, I really want to try to succeed in that. Like, you know, I've ridden, well, that was what, 120K? I can't remember, 110K over that period of single track, which seemed like a lot. I was wasted after that. Riding all night like that, but I could have gone further,
right,
if I didn't have to dry out so completely.
Well, that's a, like, again, bringing up Andy again, he really was trying to learn the winter ultra thing. Like, if you watched his Strava and his social media going into the active Epica, he was very conscientious and he was really thoroughly planning things. So he's going for big rides. He did multiple, like, well over 150 kilometer winter rides.
Yeah.
And he, every time he was like learning new things and trying new things, which I'm sort of bad at. I'm just sort of like, oh, this works for ski touring. It should work for this. Or, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't have that either drive or time. Maybe, I don't know what it is. Probably more drive, because I probably have all the time and encouragement in the world. But, like, yeah, he'd go out there and be like, okay, this worked for me this time. Oh, this is something I can learn. And so he has it dialed and he's very methodical about that kind of thing. And so I think that's what would set you up for success, where after this event for me, I'm like, yeah, at most I would sleep one night out in the winter. I would not do back-to-back nights.
Yeah.
Yeah. That just...
It's all just a puzzle, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, and having that hypervigilance to think about all the...
Yeah.
I interrupted you there. So
No, that's okay. Yeah, it's just, I can't imagine putting your sleep kit away and then pulling it back out.
Yeah. Wet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you talked about having the emergency bivy. I think that's the worst thing ever.
Well, it's not that... I listened to the one where you were talking about how, like, you got, like, hypothermia.
Oh, yeah.
This one's, like, the next level that actually has it breathes.
Oh, the SOL one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Tyvek. It's a Tyvek bag.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like that one as well.
Yeah.
But the emergency one works. I remember slipping it on, and you could just feel the heat coming onto you. But then, literally, like, maybe an hour or 2 hours later, waking up just shivering.
Yeah, I think that one's more for, like, you broke your femur and you're laying on the road.
I think so, too.
Then your friend wraps you in it. And unwraps you as need be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I started just carrying the blanket. And on the divide, I had my sleep system sucked. So I had the blanket out every night, pretty much. And the blanket was great because it wouldn't get moist. Because it had so much ventilation. But it still provided the same amount of warmth, I think.
Yeah.
It's all just learning, right?
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. So tell me more about the elephant. Tell me more about how... how it gets planned, how it, like, Because you guys pretty much change it every year.
Yeah, right? We try to, for sure. And sometimes we'll just run it backwards. I wouldn't be surprised if we revisit some of the old ones because there's some good stuff to be had. Mm. But even that, I think we'll revisit the good sections of the old ones. So I'd be sort of surprised if it's ever just like, whatever, let's just run the 2021 again.
Right.
But Andrew loves it. Like the route planning stuff. He's always, and he and his partner are out there all the time doing rides. So they're finding new stuff all the time. And so he's the perfect guy to have for that. He's retired now and they're both strong. So they're doing really interesting things. And it's great because he'll come back from a ride and you'll look at his Strava file and be like, oh crap, where'd he go? What'd he do? How'd he do that? How'd he do this? And you'll talk to him. He's like, oh yeah, that one's good to send like one or two people over, but I wouldn't tell people to go over that one. Right. Right. So there'll be
adventure.
Yeah. There'll be some stuff. And so I think that really plays into it is that he just always has all these great ideas. Like, oh, where could it be? Like I ran into him the other night and he just couldn't stop talking about like how excited he is about this year's elephant. So he's very much a route planner. He's also never tracks, which is hilarious to me. So he does them. He's out there, but no one knows. So, so he generally does the route planning. This year is the first time in a while that we actually all sat down. We went out for a beer. So it was myself, Eric Ross, James McKee, and Andrew McLeod. And I was just like, I was very fixated on this Kootenai Lake idea, which I'm still very fixated on. But he had to keep being like, Nathan, it's early July. That river's going to be high. Nathan, this isn't going to work. So I'm the guy who's never ridden any of it and just wants to go set it up. And he's the guy that brings it back into reality. And then I'm just the energetic mouthpiece, I think, is what I would call myself. Andy referred to me twice as the silver tongue of the lost elephant. But I like it. Like I like sending out those emails. I like interacting with the people. I would say that from the outside looking in, and maybe from the inside looking out, that I'm like the guy running the show, but I don't feel comfortable making any decisions without running it by those guys first. Eric is actually, I ran into Eric on a walk and I said something like, oh, I want to do this thing, but I don't want to step on any toes. And he's like, whose toes are you worried about stepping on? It's almost like he's like, Nathan, give your head a shake. Like, he's like, whose toes are you stepping on? And I said, well, yours, Andrew's, or James's. And he's like, what are you talking? Like, and then it came out. It's like, wait, yeah, Eric, the reason he's sort of one of the, I don't know what the right term is. They're all so lame.
Board member,
figurehead, whatever, is because he's finished them all. Like, he's one of the guys that was like actually doing them. So then people are like, okay, well, let's get his opinion. Right. And then he's like, and I'm like, well, yours and Andrew's and James's. I don't want to step on anyone's toes. And then Eric's like, well, Andrew doesn't care. He sets the route, but he's just like, do what you need to do. And then James is also just like an encouraging dude. But I think his tie to it is he's been with it since the beginning. So this idea was formulated by Brad Fuller, who passed away in an avalanche. And I actually never met Brad Fuller, but James was good friends with him. And so they were always doing these, you know, big gravel backcountry Kootenai gravel rides, whatever you want to call them, where they're, you know, finding their way around back there. And so Brad Fuller came up with this idea, but by the time it ran, it was the year after he'd passed. So James has that sort of historical tie to it, and he's done a bunch of them. But Eric sort of gave me this blessing in a way, just be like, you're not making stupid decisions. Just do what you want to do. Like, what you're doing is good. So keep going with it. So that gave me a little bit of like a sigh of relief, because in no way do I ever want someone to think that I'm laying claim to this event, because like it's just not mine to claim. I'm not a uber finisher like Eric. Like, it's not like I've done every single route forwards and backwards, single speed and geared. I'm just the guy who saw this event and said, we should tell more people about this, which in and of itself is a bit of a risk. Because what if those guys were like, just gave me the middle finger and is like, no, this is for us. Mm. Don't tell anyone. But they're pumped. Like, sometimes I feel, because our crew, that crew, I don't know, can be a little bit like, oh, we'll just do our own thing and not worry about, you know, making a big splash about it. I might be a little bit more loudmouthed and splashy than them, especially compared to Andrew or James, where they're just like, they don't tell anybody anything that they're doing. I was just always worried about it being this, like, event. But Andrew gets pumped when I tell him how many people have signed up.
How many people signed up this year?
70 now already.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so 70. And oh, wow, historically, all of our signups happen, I don't know, around now. They start coming in now. They started coming in like in November. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh man, I guess I'm on it now. It's time to get going. And also anytime I put out a social post, even if it's just like we were just talking about the sponsors, how I'm sort of trickling out all the different sponsors that are on board, every time I do that, I get 5 signups.
Right.
Minimum. Like, and so.
And there's attrition there as well.
Yeah, definitely. Like last year there was 49 signed up, and I think maybe 15 didn't show up. So yeah, it's nuts. Like, and I attribute that a little bit to the AR 700 not running.
Right.
That people are like, oh, I want an organized event to go to. But at the same time, as you said, like, it's not like the AR 700 ceased to exist. The route is still there. But I think people like that. I know people like the showing up, there being a bunch of like-minded doofuses there all lined up, ready to do the same dumb thing as them. And I like that. I do. Like the few like cross country mountain bike races or races where I've lined up and there's a number on me, I get sort of stressed out. Maybe because if it's like a, you know, it's only going to be an hour and a half race or something like that. And I don't like that, but I love that like rollout where everyone's just jazzed. We're going down Chief Isidore way faster than we have any right to be riding at that moment, because we're all going to blow up pretty quick here. But just that vibe is so good, and it's just so fun. That, and then, you know, knowing that you're out on that route, even if you're riding by yourself for hours and hours and hours on end without seeing a single soul, you know there's people right in front of you, you know there's people right behind you, and there's something really special about that. So yeah, I see why people go to the event that has a start time.
There's a little bit of inherent safety in that. Knowing that you're with a group, because mm-hmm. the time that I ITT'd it, mm-hmm. it was terrifying.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There was one dude, Aaron Weinsheimer, was touring it. And I would see glimpses of his track
mm-hmm.
through the bushwhack and stuff. But it's like, it feels totally different when you're totally wandering off into the Rockies by yourself. It's just something weird about it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And like, I remember this year, before I dropped out, I stopped in Canal Flats and grabbed a Pepsi and phoned my wife and had a bit of a meltdown on the side of the road.
Was this last year?
Yeah, the 2023 one. Yeah. And then I looked and Eric was only 2 kilometers ahead of me. And I thought I was just like cooked. And so she's like, well, get on your bike and go catch up to Eric and talk to him. easier said than done.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah, no problem. I'll go catch up to Eric. But that did at least make me like, oh, okay, they're not like, they haven't totally cooked me out. Right. But it's not even that I was like trying to compete against them. It's just like knowing that they were there.
Yeah.
Right? Because I knew in the long run, no chance. But and then showing up to Fairmont where you were stationed, and all of a sudden there's so many people there. Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm like right in the mix. And then we did that Fairmont like that climb up to the Fairmont ski hill. I was like, okay, cool, cool. Like Mark Hillary and Julia and Jeff Dick. There was a whole bunch of people on that climb at the same time as me. Yeah. And I wasn't talking to them. They were actually just ahead of me talking. But I just couldn't quite hang on to their pace, but I could see them the whole time. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, cool. This is great. Actually, we had a funny moment at that one because that shared similar road to, what's it called? The Funger.
Yeah.
Funger route. And that's where I had first ridden with Julia and Mark. I'd met Jeff on the 2022 elephant. But we were all at this like washed out bridge filling up water, right? The whole Funger stopped there and everyone's there. So then fast forward a few months to the elephant. I come around that corner. It's Jeff Dick, Julia Halawa, and Mark Hillary filling up water at the same creek. And I was like, we have been here together. Like we have not been anywhere else together yeah. at the same time, but we've all been here together before. So that goes back to that whole, I don't know, that connection you, I guess, feel on these events. So
yeah,
with the people.
So, yeah. It's a special feeling. And I think mm-hmm. that's probably what keeps it going too. Yeah. Right? For you. I was going to say too earlier, we were talking about, you know, not wanting to step on toes. It's like, you remind me of me a little bit because I feel like you're a bottom up thinker. Lots of heart.
Yeah.
Not so pragmatic.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Right?
But then when you encounter, you need the pragmatism, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
In that, because mm-hmm. I feel like I'm that way at my new place of work. I come in with lots of heart, but then I'm always mm-hmm. like knocked down a couple notches.
Yeah.
It's like, no, because politics and yeah. this and that mm-hmm. and the other thing. Yeah. So it's a good dynamic to bring.
Oh, for sure.
So you might yeah. be feeling imposter syndrome maybe over yeah. that, but honestly, it's like, it's the bottom up thinkers, I think, that maybe bring all the, not all obviously, but bring in that injection of creativity mm-hmm. to something
yeah.
where the pragmatists can be like, okay, I like that, but
yeah. Blah, yeah. Blah, 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 blah. And I think I do feel supported by those dudes. Like, I think I'm very appreciated actually. Like I do feel that my willingness to just, I don't know, I'll send the emails, I'll update the website. Because really, what else am I doing? All I'm doing is updating a website and sending emails.
You're building the stoke. That's yeah, what you're doing.
But that's exactly, yeah, and that's what I love. Important. That's exactly what I love. And so, and that's sort of the easy thing. Actually, you probably know this about me, but I'm easily moved to tears. But earlier this winter, sometime this winter, the crew that I refer to as the Golden Crew, even though I'm going to guess that more than half of them have no affiliation to Golden at all, sent me an email saying, and it came out right after the AR700, so maybe they were a little afraid, but they're saying like, we really appreciate what you guys are doing. Like, we love this event and we want to do anything we can to help keep it going. Nice. So we were just talking about this. I don't know if it was before. Yeah, it was before this, where we're having breakfast, that people that offer you help. And sometimes it's easier to say no and be like, oh, whatever, I've got this, it's easy, instead of saying yes. And yeah, come on in and help. But it like actually sort of welled me up when I read their email. It was such a, just a lovely email.
It's validating
yeah.
to know that what you, and that's yeah. important for bottom-up thinkers,
mm-hmm.
is to get a little bit of validation that,
yeah.
that our ideas aren't so flighty and, I don't know.
Yeah.
We just need that validation.
And it was cool. And I'll call them out and I'll probably miss some of them, but it was like Dave Waugh, Taryn, sorry for forgetting your last name, Taryn, Julia Halawa, and I think Darren Madley was in on it. So yeah. Like, is there one golden person in there?
It's Dave.
Yeah, exactly. And Justin Keach, who just lives around the corner here. Right. So yeah. I don't know why I think of them as the Golden Crew, but for some reason they're the Golden Crew to me. And there's some other people in there that I'm probably forgetting, but it was just like so validating. A, because I think that they're all cool people, and this is where the imposter syndrome, I hesitate to say imposter syndrome because I don't really necessarily feel that way very often, but I feel that they are all the type of people I would like to be like. Mm-hmm. So, like, I have great respect for them, I guess is what it is. I think they're all just lovely human beings that are just out there doing these events the right way. And not that there's a wrong way to do the events, but I just see the way that they do them. I'm like, yeah, that's good. That's good stuff. Yeah. And so to get that from them is like, nice, cool. And so I did say like some things that they could help with, but when I broke it down, I'm like, I'm not really, again, I'm doing the emails, which I like doing because I get good feedback on them and everyone loves a good pat on the back every once in a while. And like, it would be annoying to get someone else to update the website because then it's like, it just is super easy for me just to update the, and by update the website, I mean the start list. It's not, it takes nothing.
Yeah. And sometimes it's hard to let go of stuff too, right?
Yeah.
It's like when you've taken ownership and you've got your process and you're not feeling taxed by it.
Mm-hmm.
And you get so much meaning and enjoyment out of it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't really want to give any of that up. Mm-hmm. The stuff you want to, I mean, you could utilize people to go and pre-ride something.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things, like, I said.
Hey, go and ride this.
Yeah, that's exactly what I came back with. And so what I'm thinking of doing is putting together some of those sort of loops that I've come up with for pre-ride.
Yeah.
And just saying, hey, here's a 80K one, here's a 40K one, here's a 100K one. Yeah. Just go check it out for us. The problem is it's a really small window to check it out. Because the snow will be there until June, mid-June maybe.
There's not much snow.
It's 89%.
Oh yeah,
regular. Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's not as low as you think it is. Yeah, I know it's low in the valleys, but not up high.
Yeah, that's good.
And so so it's like for me to do it, it's like I can't get that many big rides in.
Send the drones out.
Yeah, exactly. Send the drones out to check things out. So that kind of thing. I am going to use this moment though to say that we want more like a nutrition sponsor.
Oh yeah.
And by saying nutrition, I think that's the funniest term in the world because it's like,
so beer?
How many sugars can you add to this thing? But yeah, I think it'd be cool to have something. So if there's anybody that's running any sort of or rep or anything for endurance nutrition, that would be super cool. Beer is funny you should say that because Andy is the he's on like a ambassador, I guess you'd say, for Logo, which is the non-alcoholic beer. And yeah, so they are providing. At least they've given me the okay, so now I've called them out publicly. So Logo beer is a sponsor for that the night before get together.
The
night before get together that will be at North Star Cycles again. So so there's exciting new things too. Like this is one thing I was talking to with my wife on the drive yesterday. Is it feels like anytime I open my mouth to the community, what I want will come back. Because like with my morning ride friends, I said, I'm really trying to figure out how to do sort of food at the beginning. Because last year, a bunch of people went out for dinner together, which is great. And I love that they're doing that. But I was like, I wonder if we could do something where it's all together. And so the one guy, he's the general manager at Dodge in Cranbrook, Steve McNally.
Steve helped me got by my van actually.
Yeah, he's
good dude.
Yeah, Steve is pretty instrumental in the Cranbrook cycling scene for sure. And then Lisa Barnes runs Max's Place, which is like a really great little bakery. But anyways, so I'm calling them out so they don't know they have to do this too. They're going to be doing a fundraiser barbecue.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, it'll come out in the emails how it's going to work. But yeah, so they're like, yeah, we can do it. And I'm like, oh, and you guys can take care of like buying and sourcing and figuring out how to do the food and how to charge and all that? Yep.
Perfect.
And I don't have to think about anything at all? Yep. Right on. So that's like, yeah. So anytime I do say, hey, I need help, it comes. So it's pretty easy.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. That's just the community side of it all, right?
Yeah, like exactly.
So stoked.
Yeah.
And yeah, these things don't happen. I mean, no one's really getting paid. Like, no one's getting paid from this.
Yeah, well, that's...
You know, like, it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort, and you're away from your family doing stuff, and you're out on a ride.
Yeah.
You know, trying to... Basically on a on your free time, but you're still thinking about it.
Yeah, right? yeah.
So it has value.
Yeah, it's weird because I think that this is a bit confusing because we did talk before this, so I don't know what we talked about.
Oh, okay.
So if this is doubling up, but again, I said that everything that I understood about how these events run or whatever came from Leonard and the BC Epic, because
right.
I knew nothing, right? All I knew is Eric Ross was going and doing these cool rides everywhere. And then one of them was called the BC Epic. So I looked into it and now I'm going to go to the BC Epic and I go and show up and there's a barbecue the night before. Mm. And Leonard, the guy who's running it, also has the FKT at the time. And Leonard is also riding it that time. So obviously if you run one of these, you also ride in them. And so last year I was on the ride and someone's like, it's really cool to see like an event, and the event organizer, which please don't use that term ever again, but
the marketing guy
who he called the event organizer is on the ride with it. And I just looked at him like, okay, cool. Like that's, but for the next little bit, I'm like, what are you talking about? Why is that interesting? But then you go to any race where people are paying $150 to $300 to enter, that event organizer is not riding it.
That's a different beast, though,
I think so, too. But yeah, it does seem so strange to me.
As soon as you take money in, then I think as soon as you start taking money for an event like that, I think you're assuming a little bit more
responsibility. You have to be watching it. You have to be there to answer questions.
And I hate the word liability.
Yeah.
You know, you're assuming a lot. Mm-hmm. And especially if people are paying, then there might be a feed station.
Yeah.
And people might leave stuff that you need to get to that feed station.
Yeah.
Or you're assuming a lot of responsibility. Yeah. Where I think these events are kind of, I mean, the grassroots nature of these events is just basically like show up, the clock starts at 7 and we're going to go ride bikes for 3 or 4 days. And
Yeah. And so, so that was just sort of like all these things. And that's funny you say that because this, I hate to keep bringing it up. It seems like, although I listen to all these podcasts and everyone always brings up whatever's closest to their brain. But the Active Epica, it was the first time I'd spent money on an event. Right. So it was like, and it was big. It was $160. So I was like, holy crap, what am I going to get for this? Like, and yes, it's a winter one. So I knew there was a bit of safety involved. And there was feed stations and they were really awesome. But I went into it and it's like the three of us driving there were like, have you heard anything from them? No, I haven't heard anything. They were really good. Like if you emailed the event organizer, awesome. He would get back to you right away. Give you all the information and more. Wonderful. But there wasn't like that group email that I thought was a thing that you're supposed to do as a event organizer.
Well,
and
I think it's something you should do.
Yeah. But Andy and Eric were like, no, this feels more like a normal event to us. And I'm like, oh, okay. And we get there and it was still just sort of like, I don't know what's going on. Like I was like, I feel like I don't have enough information. And it ended up being just an amazing event, like super. The volunteers were amazing. The guy who's running it, who didn't race in it, but that's because he was probably running his tail off that day. Because all sorts, that's a whole different beast, though. They have all sorts of different. There's running and different distances and all that kind of stuff. So he's working hard that day. I'm like, okay. So it starts to make sense. So I just started asking, like, what do people expect? Like, if you're paying $160 for this, what do people expect? And I walked away with it with all sorts of sort of weird answers. But all I know is I walked away from that event happy to have spent that money on it. It was wonderful.
As long as you found value.
Yeah. I wasn't there to win. I was just there to test myself, to try out winter, and to go to, I love Manitoba. So it was cool for me to go back there. And then leading up to it, I'm like, why did I spend all this money? I could just go ride this on my own. But there's something different to doing it with, you know, people at feed stations, warming stations that are like there to hype you up, and you're passing other people, so seeing other people. So I get it. But at first I was just like, I don't know, the gravel races around here, are on the same roads that we ride every day. So why would I spend $150 to chew on someone else's dust? But I get it now. I get it. There's that lining up. There's the camaraderie. There's the hype. So I get it. And those event organizers are working their, again, they're working their tails off to get the event A, started, and B, run properly, right? Like, I can't imagine the stress that they're under the day of, hoping that it's going to be a success.
There must be a spectrum to it, right? Because there's like, you know, people who, a group's going to go ride the AR this summer with nothing, nobody, nothing. And then there's like the Silk Road Mountain Race where you're getting, you know, a goodie bag and you've got cars driving around.
Yeah, that's a, yeah, the media.
The media. Yeah. But also just, I think that it's like, it's almost like you're paying, insurance would be the wrong word, but you could always get picked up. Mm-hmm. Right, like if you were in trouble, and then an organizer's car goes by, you could flag one down and get a ride.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of a maybe a bit more safety. There's a bit of a safety cushion for the athletes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and especially like that one, those kind of ones. I don't even want to think of what goes into them, because A, the organizer's not even from those countries.
Right.
Right. So it's like, oh, that's just, I can't even imagine.
That's a whole other level, right? Because then he's dealing with all the politics and all the logistics of dealing with roads and dealing with the community. And, Because, I watched that. It was the Silk Road or was the Atlas. I can't remember where the organizer had said, the race is officially over. It's been canceled.
Right.
Was that the Atlas?
That was... whatever one just got... I think it was the Atlas. It got delayed by like 24 hours or something like that.
Oh, the announcer or the organizer, I think Nelson, he was just like, it's officially not happening. However, you all have the route loaded.
So. Oh, really? Oh, I didn't see that.
That's, everyone just went, right?
Okay,
And I think maybe there's probably even a liability aspect to that.
Yeah,
in that country, that whoever was the boss of that town was like, no, we don't want any responsibility for this with the road closures or whatever. We just, we can't be doing it.
Huh.
So, and it speaks to the stoke, right? People are like, oh, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Start the clock. Let's ride. We'll finish it. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And the other thing too, people spend so much money to get there.
Oh yeah.
Like imagine that.
Yeah.
Just the flight and the acclimatizing and the time adjustment and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's just a totally different level of.
Yeah, exactly. Of, and that's where, it's a funny thing. Like, just here's the route. We're starting at 7. And I do truly like the theory of it being a group ride.
Yeah.
Like obviously, as soon, even on a Thursday night group ride, like trail ride, there's always an aspect of race to it.
Oh yeah, everyone's pushing each other.
Yeah, there's
a
like
little bit,
you're always like, whether you're in the fast group or the medium group, there's still somebody that's pushing the pace a little bit. So, but I love the idea of these community, like grassroots ones, I guess, for the colloquial term, where there will be the 8 people that are duking it out at the front. There'll be the mid-pack that are pushing themselves hard and accomplishing something that's huge for them.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be the party pace crew that's sticking together no matter what, and camping together, like 5 or 6 people, whatever it is. And then there'll be that Lantern Rouge that is, in my opinion, running the most interesting race.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, ride. Because they're generally either starting something new or really challenging themselves. And they're out there so much longer that they're surviving. And we were talking about the gravel racing scene right now. Oh, it's like blowing up. And one of the things that all those top level pros keep saying that I really appreciate is when they're talking about like a race like Unbound, that they're now finishing in like 10 or 11 hours. And so everyone's like, holy, how can you do that so fast? Like, that's shocking. Like, absolutely next level human being shocking. But then those pros turn around and say, You know what's really crazy is the people that are finishing it in 24 hours. They're out there so much longer.
Yeah.
They're battling the weather way longer than we are. Yeah. They are working just as hard as we are because it's a different ride for them.
It's relative. It's all relative.
And
right?
So they're looking back and being like, I could never be out there for 24 hours. Where the person that finishes in 24 hours is like, I can't believe they did that in 11 hours, you know? So it's like, I love that sort of aspect because I think it gets blown up even more on a multi-day event where, you know, Megan or Andy is finishing it in 35, 36 hours. And then there's someone coming in like 3 hours or sorry, doing it in three sleeps.
Yeah.
All right. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah.
Well, it just reminds me of the Buckshot, right? Talking about Megan Hakkinen, who's blowing up all over the place, right? And crushing everything she touches. And it's like, you look at her bike and it's like, you know, how far was that? 381K? It's a day ride.
Yeah.
It's a day ride for her, right? So you look at what she's carrying and it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Based on,
exactly.
on her experience,
exactly.
her skill, her fitness, all that stuff. What she's carrying is appropriate. Where I didn't carry a pad or any of that kind of stuff, but I had way more stuff because I wasn't going to finish it in 18 hours.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But was I working as hard or suffering as much as her? Probably.
Yeah.
You know, it's just relative because I'm not her. I'm not a super talented, fit athlete like she is. So it's, or thinking of, you know, watching Melanie's son put out that video.
I watched that. That was great.
It's like Lantern Rouge right there at the back. Yeah. You're out there forever. And it's just, you think of just all of that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, while people finish it in 3 days, they're out there for a week.
Yeah.
And it's a long time.
Well, that's, I watched that one too and I really appreciated it. It actually made me want to go back and do it again and made me be like, it's not that far off before Isla can do that with me. But I started crunching numbers as one does. And the lead pack on that one, which was, I can't remember their names. There's three dudes just going buck wild. Like Mikey Coulter was in like fourth, I think. And if he's getting blown off the back, then you know the lead group is going fast.
Oh, the talent.
And they were pulling into Grand Forks for sunrise on the first day.
I don't know how far that is.
That is like 380-ish.
Right.
Like they're pulling in, they said they were descending into it on the first day, where I used to think making it past like Shoot Lake, because I've never made it past Shoot Lake in one day, but I remember the first time I did it, the lead people were doing Shoot Lake in one day, which is like 260.
265. Because that was my goal when I rode it the first time.
Yeah.
I want to get to Shoot Lake.
Yeah.
And I got there like fucking 3 a.m.
Yeah.
So where people were blowing through there like at noon.
Think about that. So these guys are only 4 hours ahead of you pulling in there at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
They've now gone down all the way to Rock Creek,
to
Midway,
to
Greenwood, and then up and over into Grand Forks.
Yeah.
You know, just 4 hours more.
I know.
Like it's insane the pace. Crazy. But then you have Casey and Melanie back there just plodding away, enjoying time, right?
Like enjoying it,
And so like, and I remember the first time I did any KVR thing, it was with my family. We did Midway to Penticton in 4 days.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. So I'm towing Isla on the WeHoo and we got ourselves all loaded up and she's like 4 years old. And so we did it like, in 4 days. And then I did that whole section that we rode in 4 days and more, and like 50 kilometers more in one day.
Right.
And on one of my attempts.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, like this is crazy. Like it's crazy how much different you can ride these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just not stopping as much as...
Yeah, and just approaching it differently, too. Like, there's one scene, actually, in Casey and Melanie's on their first day where they're stopped and they have the stove out. And I'm like, that is really early.
Oh, right.
Really early. Like, that I don't even think I'd pulled a bag of chips out. And I'm not a fast dude. And I'm not, this isn't a slight on them. It's not a slight on me. It's not a slight on the fast
just
people.
A different adventure.
But it is a different adventure. Yeah. And I'm like, I remember that picnic table. And it's like, huh. Like, this is a whole different ride.
Yeah.
And super cool. So, yeah. I actually think that Melanie's story last year was, or sorry, not last year, the year before when she went over Coco Claims was my favorite of the whole thing. But it doesn't really get shouted out that much. But she had, and I might be getting this wrong, so anyone can correct me. But I think she'd set herself aside like 5 days to do it. And she did it in 3. And I remember watching her, because I did it in like a day and a half. The Dumbo. This is all just the Dumbo. So I did the Dumbo in, it's probably my best, strongest ride I've ever had. And it was a day and a half. It was the same one that Andy did the same amount of time to do the Jumbo. But I was super pumped on my own ride and just riding high, right? So now I'm watching everyone's dots come in and going down and cheering them in and all that kind of stuff. And I'm watching Melanie's dot one night. I'm like, okay, she's going to stop on the Bull River because there's still like 80K to go for her. She didn't. She just kept riding and rode till like, I think she came in around midnight or 1 a.m.
Yeah.
But like, what a huge feat.
Yeah.
She had planned for like 5 days and did it in 3. But not only that, she rode till like 1 in the morning, midnight, whatever it was, to get in and didn't stop and pushed herself through like the Pickering Hills, pushed herself through the whole Chief Isidore when she was probably just completely beat. But she didn't, like, that must have been such a cool feeling for her. And that's the kind of story that I love seeing on these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know, facing adversity. I think too, when you get, the closer you get, the harder you push. Cause you just,
yeah,
you just want it to be over.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. You time it out and you're just like, oh my God, I just want to be done with this.
Yeah. Yeah. And who knows? I can't speak at all to where her mindset was. Maybe she was like riding high or maybe she was just in the doldrums, but I don't know, but she did it. So it's cool.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that's nice about these events is, they're fairly accessible. Right?
Mm-hmm.
For most.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What's the deal with the resupply this year?
Zero.
The zero resupply.
Unless you want to stop at 27 kilometers in Kimberley.
Right.
So you'll probably get to Kimberley before most of the stores are open.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a cool one this year. Andrew really liked the idea of keeping, do you know the rails? Yeah, you know rails trails between Cranbrook and Kimberley.
Yeah.
So it's a 27 kilometer.
It's horrible
paved.
Coming down it on a single speed.
Yeah. Oh, on a single speed, it's the worst.
Fucking horrible.
It's so bad on a single speed. But it's a beautiful rail grade paved 27 kilometer start. So essentially, of all the elephants, I predict this one as being the most challenging, but it's going to start the chillest. Well, unless you're racing.
Yeah. You know what, though? It's because it's rail grade, right?
Yeah.
So whatever, 3 to 4%. It's still kind of like, it takes a lot out of you.
It does. Yeah. But it's like, we do that ride and back before work in the morning.
Right.
So it's just, and it's on like a road bike.
Yeah.
So it's just beautiful rail grade. And then you get to Kimberley and then it starts. I have not done the section heading sort of looping around the Kimberley ski hill. It's not the classic, like, there's a classic looper on the Kimberley scale, but it's bigger than that. And then the closest you'll come to another store is when you cross the highway near Moye Lake, and you could go like 20 kilometers north, sorry, south to the township of Moye.
Yeah.
But you're adding 40 kilometers for what?
Right.
So
what date is it?
It's July 13th. Yeah, July 13th. Sorry. That's an answer I should probably know off the top of my head.
Oh, July 13th.
Yeah. Okay. That's another change of it. So, yeah. So, to finish up on the...
Yeah, sorry.
I'm also typing it in, so I have the website.
And I'm sorry I keep picking up my phone. Yeah. I'm kind of like checking.
That's okay. I just have it open, so if we have any questions about all the cool people that are signed up and stuff too. Yeah. So, 2 big changes. It's a week earlier.
Yeah, did it change recently?
No, a while ago. I think I put it out. Are you on the email list?
I am.
Okay, good. Anyways, so July 13th. And the reason being is the fires were way too close for comfort.
Yeah, they were.
By the time everyone is off the route, 2 days later, three fires started on the route. And I'm not saying we started those fires, but because I know actually how all those fires got started. But it's just too close. Like the fire season used to be August, September. And now it's just like, so I pushed it a week early. That was mainly my decision. And everyone signed off on it. Because we went through a very vigorous sign-off process. that was a lot of sarcasm. Let's in that. Okay, cool. Yeah, it was getting loose. I could feel it. Yeah, so hopefully to dodge fire season, which, as we all know, in this day and age, there's no dodging fire season. Oh, yeah. But... that's also the same day that the Fernie Gravel Grind is happening. And there's a couple other things. So it's like, oh, I didn't do my due diligence in checking. It's getting a little close to BC Epic, but not that close. People
when
can
does
do,
the Epic start? 29th?
Yeah.
Right.
So I did check it against the BC Epic, and that's all I checked it against. Because that's, I don't know, all that matters in this world. This little circle I'm in.
Can you take a break?
Sure.
1 second?
Yeah.
Me too.
Dude, you go first
because
I'm
going to
destroy that place.
Yeah, the coffee was kicking in hard. Yeah. I had to go.
Are we recording now?
I didn't even stop. I couldn't be bothered. Just more editing. I'll make sure that dead spot in the audio, I'll cut that out.
After we were talking about our pee-pee breaks. Yeah, so pre-PP break, we were talking about the change of date. Yeah, and so hopefully that'll just buy us a little bit of, not necessarily, we can't obviously control fires, but just it'll take the weight off my shoulders a bit. Like the last thing I want to do is be sending people out against BC Wildfire's wishes or even have the optics of playing fast and loose. That's the thing. I don't want to... in fact, last year I tried to set up a group bikepacking ride in September. I had four different routes. So I'm like, okay, I'll do this one. Fire.
Oh yeah.
Do this one. Fire. Like every single one. And finally I thought I had one and someone's like, oh yeah, that fire just crossed over that. Oh. You know, like you got it. So we just went to Rosalind and rode seven summits instead, which was great. It was fun. But it's like I didn't get out for another. I actually only slept in my tent off my bike with my family last year, which was great. Like it was awesome trip. But yeah, I never did any other bike packing last year during the summer. So that was, it was sort of, the fires was a huge thing for me to try and dodge those. And then also this year we're starting at 7 instead of 6. Because the reason the 6 o'clock was put in place was the year that Two Scoop Steve was on the...
Right.
So we wanted to get as many people there before closing as possible. So we moved it up to 6. But then we're like, wait, there's no resupply. So what does it matter? Except for Andrew called us a bunch of wusses. So...
Why? Because we stopped for ice cream?
No, because we're starting at 7 instead of 6 now. Yeah. No. No, actually the 6 o'clock was his idea to get more people to ice cream. But yeah, no, it was funny. I put it out and... Eric and Andy and I talked about it on the way to Manitoba. And we're like, wait, yeah, why do we have to start it at 6? We can start it whenever. And in fact, it started making my brain go like, there's some of those events that start at like 10 at night and stuff
But
oh, no, let's just keep it sort of what it is.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
Considering there's no resupply, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's exactly what I thought. But yeah, Andrew said something like, oh, they can ride through for 48 hours straight, but they can't start at 6 a.m. So he was mocking a little bit.
Well, you got to get your sleep. If you're not going to get any sleep, at least you can get a couple hours before.
Yeah. So yeah, no. So there's just a few minor changes, but those all get put out on the email. Or I think they're well enough communicated. And if you haven't figured that out yet, you got sort of bigger problems to figure out for your ride if you can't figure out the start time. And then, yeah, and actually this year I started sort of promoting more for people to sign up just for the email, because that's the best way to get the information. Mm. And I have been getting a lot of that. So if anyone wants to do that, just go to the site and sign up like you're going to sign up, but push couch instead of Dumbo or Jumbo, and you'll just get the emails and not be put on the start list.
Couch.
So
that's funny.
Yeah, it's all fairly well explained on the website. Yeah, I don't know. That's sort of all I needed to cover about the elephant for sure.
Lost elephant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny that, I don't know if the drinking game is still going, but there was someone who posted a comment
that
about
was good.
Every time you say lost elephant to drink.
Yeah, this one, you can put a moratorium for this episode, because that would be a bit hectic.
Well, drink logo, non-alcoholic
beer. Yeah, exactly.
Beer.
Maybe if you're listening to this one, use a non-alcoholic beer.
Shout out to... It's logo?
Yeah, so
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's like, what are we going to call our beer? I don't know. Some logo. Let's put a logo on it.
Yeah. So it's Fernie Brewing Company's like non-alcoholic line. And they're good. Yeah, they're great. Actually, it's funny. I've been hitting that, like, the non-alcoholic for quite a long time now. It's sort of nice having a... Like, a full-on industry seems to have popped up recently of, like, not just O'Doul's.
Yeah.
For non-alcoholic, and it's great.
Are you a drinker?
No, you know, like I was, it's funny. I had to get my gallbladder out.
Did you?
When I was like, I don't know. It was like quite a few years ago. When Isla was a baby, so it's like 10 years ago now. No, 12 years ago now. But anyways, we went and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. Because I guess my gallbladder was also in a weird spot in my body. And so they're palpating me and stuff. And so they asked, like, how much do you drink? I'm like, one beer on a Thursday night and maybe one on a weekend, because that Thursday night was our group rides.
Yeah.
And they...
So not a big drink.
No. So, but the doctor didn't believe me.
Really?
And they actually said it was because of drinking was why I was having this pain.
Really?
Because I guess historically it's overweight ladies in their 50s that get their gallbladders out. And so I was not fitting any of those three things. And yeah, they just didn't believe me until a doctor that I respect more now, because she was like, no, you can't just poke them in the like abdomen and figure it out. So she gave me a ultrasound, figured out it was my gallbladder. And but yeah, so that's the long way to answer your, am I a big drinker? But then actually it was at the pandemic, we were still doing our group rides and...
You what?
Well...
I'm kidding.
But we weren't going to the pub after, right? We would do the group ride and then hang out in the...
You'd all just share bottles.
Yeah, no. We're hanging out in the parking lot afterwards, right? And I felt a little bit like, maybe this isn't even the right thing to be doing. Ugh, so I rode home and I found that in the 15-minute ride from the trailhead to my house, I went from being like, oh, I can't wait to get home and have a beer, to being, I can't wait to get home and have a bubbly. And so I was like, huh, I wonder what that means. And I think it was like almost Pavlovian. So then I just went, I'm like, I'm just not gonna. And I just started drinking non-alcoholic beers and bubblies. But, because my daughter actually asked me, like, when's the last time you had a real beer? And I'm like, I had one in Manitoba. And it's essentially if there's an interesting one.
Right.
Right? Like if there's something cool, then I'm gonna try it. Yeah. But no, I've never, like, no, I was an idiot in high school, so I switched some things out and made some life changes that way. And never, I've never even, like, been inebriated since then, so, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I was inebriated, maybe around Christmas time in Calgary, but just... house party,
yeah,
you know, sitting around doing Christmas things,
yeah,
and just drinking wine,
yeah. So yeah, I don't know, it's just but I do really appreciate like the craft. I love the craft brew, yeah, craft beers and stuff. It's sort of fun to try the new things and be like, oh, there's so many interesting flavors, notes in here. And I'm sort of nerdy like that with coffee too, so it's
today,
yeah. Steve brewed me a decent coffee and he hasn't stopped complaining about it.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's fine.
Ugh, it's so dark. That's one of the things, unfortunately, I've had to taper with in terms of expense.
Okay, yeah.
Was, you know, from time to time, yeah. if it's on sale, I'll get something.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, this was not good stuff.
I actually treat it as my souvenir. So if I'm in a different town, that's the way I souvenir myself, is find the interesting coffee places and buy a pound of coffee there.
Yeah, when I was in Squamish, I ended up getting some coffee roasted in Pemberton.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking for distilleries too, but they weren't open when I went through there. Distilleries kind of, or craft beer.
Just something like that. Those are the kind of things that are good souvenirs instead of like a
trinket.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if you're gifting it to someone, right?
Yeah.
The only thing I get bummed about with a distillery gift or a beer gift or a coffee gift is that it's kind of consumed and it's gone.
Yeah.
That's the only bummer about it. Yeah,
you know? It is a bit, but like my friend hosted us in Manitoba. I have some very dear friends in southern Manitoba. So they hosted Andy and Eric and I, and I brought them, my father-in-law gifts us like stacks of moose meat every year.
Oh, nice.
So I gifted them some moose meat, and Andy works in a liquor store in Fernie. So he brought them like this crazy assortment of like different local brews. And I'm like, that's cool. Like,
what did Eric bring?
Eric's a freeloader. If he brought them something, I don't remember. Probably Eric wasn't as cool as what we brought him.
Is he fully retired now, Eric?
Oh yeah, fully. Well, here's the beauty. So every day for lunch, I go for a 30-minute walk. I eat my lunch at my desk and then take my lunch break as a walk. And he walks past where I work all the time. So I've run into him like 3 times recently. He's just out there. I swear he goes grocery shopping and only buys one bag of groceries just because something to do.
Well, it's a very Euro thing, yeah. I think, right? Because we have these massive refrigerators that to make efficient, we need to pack them.
If there's one person
throwing food away.
There's one person who looks very Euro, it's Eric. He's just ambling along, and I'm going to call him out on this publicly because I joke with him all the time. He just looks like the dude that's enjoying life the most in the world. He's just like sort of head back, walking slow, got his one grocery bag, his earphones in, just enjoying the day. Often he'll have a coffee in the other hand. Yeah, he's got it figured out. I don't know how he got it figured out. It's not like he was like some investment banker or something.
Oh, I want to get it figured out. You know what? Yeah. You know what I've found through the last year, kind of with the family breaking up, is this is all I have. What you see in this apartment. I mean, kids' room, my room, bikes. I don't have any storage.
Yeah. Like
junk on the front patio, but it's like, this is all I have. And it's like, it's actually pretty refreshing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like if I needed to move, I could probably, the furniture I could just get rid of. Cause it's interesting to live minimalist.
Well, it's
more so anyway.
Yeah. It's sort of crazy. Like, this is something I talk about probably too much to the people around me. But you drive up to, my father-in-law lives north of Edmonton. So you drive through like Calgary, Red Deer, Edmonton, and the amount of storage for RVs is so bonkers.
Yeah.
It's like cities worth of RVs out there just sitting. And like, I'm sure those people take them out and have their nice time in a
couple weeks of summer,
but they sit for 99% of their life.
And those big ones are like, they're $100,000 right?
It just seems so funny. Like, and I get that money's different to different people, but wow.
I say this half in jest, but it's because, you know, kids are forever. But as soon as my kids are old enough to not need me anymore, I was like, I'm so out of here. I love you guys, but I'm gone. I gotta go. I got things I need to see.
Yeah.
So if you guys can meet up with me somewhere, but
well, that's almost the beauty, right? Is at that stage, just like wandering about. Yeah, Jen and I often say once Isla goes to college, it's like, how can we just live in a van, go check everything out and meet her? Like, that's the other thing is like, oh, you want to go do something? Sure, we'll help you do it, because then we get to go do it too. Actually, this year we're gonna do we've got it booked off to do that Alberta. It's in the Cypress Hills. It's the Alberta and Saskatchewan route.
Oh, it's what's like, it called?
It's called on bikepacking.com. I think it's called the Big Lonely. No, that doesn't sound.
Big Lonely.
No, it's not. Don't call it that. But it's in the Cypress Hills Interprovincial Park.
Yeah.
So that'll be Isla's sort of first challenging bike pack. She's done the Slocan Rail Trail twice now, but this one actually has climbing and stuff on it. So it looks pretty good.
That's good.
I'm pretty excited about that.
It's great that you guys can do that as a family. I have two kids that have very vastly, different differences. They're so different.
Right. And again, that's like we were talking about it earlier. We made a choice to have just the one. So it is a choice that has its pluses and minuses, but what the plus is that we just can pour it all into her, right? So she can have our undivided attention and we can do things that she just likes to do and she doesn't have to compete against anyone else for that. But at the same time, there's the challenge of growing up as an only child and having to just hang out with your parents all the time and not have a playmate.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, everybody's different. Kid's different. It doesn't matter if you grew up with a sibling or not. I mean, I have a sibling, my older sister and we get along great, you know, now but I don't really remember fighting too much. My parents say we used to bicker quite a bit, but yeah, that's a trigger for me. The bickering I cannot deal with, man. When the kids start to bicker, I hate it. I hate that. I've told my kids too. It's like, you know what? All you guys have in this world are each other. It's like, be more kind to one another. It's like when you guys get older, it's all you're going to have.
Yeah. No, it's good. Yeah. Kids are awesome. It's a special thing. To be able to,
it's hard.
Oh, it's 100% so hard, but at the same time, it's like, what a gift! What a gift that you get to like help this human being figure their way out in the world and hold their hand through it, and you know, be that individual for them to come to when they need it, like, yeah.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. That's what I'm trying to cultivate with my kids is just to be super open and, you know, doesn't matter. He won't listen to this, but you know, he's had a little bit of trouble at school, a little bit of behavior kind of stuff like that, and he'll come home after and I'll try to talk to him about it. And I think he thinks I'm going to get mad, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, buddy, let's go into the bedroom here and let's just talk. And I can see him get anxious. It's like, I'm not mad.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't there. I don't know what the truth is.
Yeah.
But we need to talk about it. So let's go talk about it.
Yeah.
And then just, I think, navigating stuff like that particular thing more gently has done nothing but make us closer.
Yeah, right? For sure.
He knows he can. Because it's like, and I mean, for me, I relate very well to both my kids, but Jasper, my boy, I just look at him and see me
right
as an 11-year-old, right? Kind of a little bit awkward and maybe socially awkward and not super athletically talented, but you know, he's artistic and he's smart and he's got all these other things going for him. So I need to remind him sometimes, like, Jasper, dude, I've been where you are.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're going through. I know what it feels like. And I know that doesn't mean anything to you in this moment.
Yeah.
But I relate to you. I understand what you're going through. And here's what I think maybe a good way to navigate this would be. Mm-hmm. And just trying to nudge them. And it seems like they're not listening. But, you know, you keep repeating the same, try this. Hopefully it'll kind of get in into their head and you just trying to guide them based on all the mistakes we made.
Yeah, exactly. Ourselves. Yeah.
And actually I was talking to my buddy, my buddy Dale, Dale Marchand, and we were just talking about kids one day and he was just like, you know, he said the same thing. It is a gift. And it can be really hard cause it's like looking in a mirror.
Right?
Cause they basically reflect you in a lot of different ways, good parts and bad parts.
Yeah.
And then, the other thing I think too is that I think having kids has made me a softer has softened me a little bit, maybe a bit more compassionate.
Yeah.
I could probably be a lot more compassionate than I am sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
But it does have that, you know, there's a sweetness there and there's this nurturing side.
Yeah.
And it just, it just, I think it makes you, I don't know. I just lately the last, you know, year, couple of years, I've just felt surrounded by so much more love. In a way, like with the people I'm in my orbit, you and all these people that are around me and my kids and yeah, having kids has definitely changed me, I think, for the better.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It, like I was always very black and white and not very flexible to those around me, and my amazingly supportive and long suffering wife has really taught me to be more flexible, more understanding, and see, I guess the word would be more empathetic. And then having a daughter, it's just been even more so, just like, right, there's things more important than yourself out there.
Oh yeah. And, and so, young girls too, I think I'm noticing this with Sloan a lot is, you know, your daughter would be in that same, you know, prepubescent going into puberty or, you know, heavily into puberty now. And it's just like to see the emotion and the struggle that they have sometimes with this shift, like growing up must be so fucking hard, you know, and boys don't really go through that, but it's at the same time, they're dealing with their own thing. Right. And just growing up and dealing with the emotion, dealing with the pain, the physical pain of growing up and aching all the time. And, you know, it's hard. We forget how hard it is. And then being, being confused or lost or, you know, that's just not knowing how to navigate certain circumstances. And it really, you know, you and, you know, we both have daughters, you know, eventually they're going to be, you know, dating or whatever. And there's going to be heartbreak. And there's going to be all that stuff coming. And it's just like, ugh. And we're not even ready for it.
No,
we don't know what we're doing either. Right.
I don't think anyone ever is. And that's almost also the beauty of it too, is that they're teaching you so much.
Reminding you. Well, man, should we go for a ride?
That's like 80% of the reason I came here. Yeah, when you said, I can't even remember what it was, but I'm like, I'm bringing a bike one way or the other. I'd love if you came with me.
And then you were talking about what we were going to ride, and it's like, I'm hurting unit.
Yeah.
Most of the time now. So But no, I did the ride we're going to do. I did it a couple of days ago because I wanted to see if it was open. And it's good. It was really good. It's really dry. It's surprisingly dry.
Yeah, I know. Like I just got back from being out of town for 3 days or two full days and seeing all the, I'm a real big fan of Strava. It's my main social media.
Strava asshole.
Yeah. But just seeing where everyone went this week, I'm like, holy, all that stuff's ready to go. Nice.
Like heat map stuff? I don't use Strava at all.
Well, I just use it like, because it's essentially like, you know, you follow whoever you follow, right? So I follow, let's say, 70 people. And so their runs and their rides go up. And it's almost like, it gives you that fear of missing out, but also that impetus to go do it. It's like, oh, so-and-so did it. I should go do it.
Right.
And that's what I love about it. It's almost like a positive peer pressure.
Yeah.
So, no, like a bunch of my friends did the around Baker Mountain route, which is essentially the Cranbrook Gravel Grind route. There's a bunch of stuff in our community forest is now opened up. It's like up high that I thought would still have snow on it. Everyone's riding it. So in a way, I'm like, oh, you guys got to it before me. But at the same time, it's like, okay, good. Everything's good to go.
Yeah.
So,
and you must be able to see it kind of people punching deeper and deeper into the woods kind of as time goes on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got on Strava for a bit, but I didn't find it healthy for me. I don't know. Mostly probably around the fear of missing out, actually.
Okay. Yeah. You know, yeah. Sometimes it is a bit tough. Like, yeah, again, I was up in Calgary for that climbing competition for my daughter, which is...
How'd she do?
Oh, she does. Like she got 12th out of 20 something.
Nice.
And she just absolutely blows me away watching those kids climb.
Yeah.
just their body awareness and strength.
Yeah, the strength.
The strength is shocking. Yeah. And it's a really cool spectator sport for a parent because it's so easy to understand what they're doing. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, that thing that they're trying to reach for is really hard. Yeah. The way that they're moving their body is really hard. And it's got a clear objective. It's like, you need to get to that top. And it's just so fun to watch. And just the perseverance. We talked about it, like how I mentioned it sort of reminds me of my youth as a skateboarder, where she has to try something over over and over
it's
again.
It's good that she has that ingrained in her, right?
Yeah, there's essentially you fail way more than you succeed.
Yeah.
And it just teaches you. Yeah, so, but yeah, yes, exactly. And well, actually, that's a great example because then she gets off and her coach is like, move your hips like this. And then she goes and does it and she gets it.
Right.
So she listens to her coach. It's just really cool to watch. And the community's great. Like all the girls there didn't seem to be any like of that. There's obviously a competitive aspect to it, but there's not.
No one's unsupportive.
Everyone's being very supportive. Yeah. Like she was climbing in between these same two girls all the time. And so they're all just chatting. They're just chatting about stuff. So it was cool to see. It's really fun.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool to see them flourish.
Yeah.
Right. Socially.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Yeah. And I think climbing is a great sport.
Well, yeah.
Because it's contained. It's safe.
Mm-hmm. And the body awareness and strength that has to go along with it is super cool. And yeah. And I know nothing. No, like
climbing's hard.
It's super hard. My joke to my daughter is that I'm a solid 5'6" climber. And she's like up in the 511A or whatever that.
Wow.
Yeah. So and she focuses more on bouldering stuff. And I'm like, I can't do any of it. And she'll do routes that I can't even fathom doing. Like my forearms just ache.
Just all legs.
I'm all weakness.
All weakness.
I'm 6 feet tall of weakness.
6 feet meek.
Yeah. So fun. That was really cool. But yeah. So super fun to go do that stuff. And then I came home and saw where everyone went. I'm like, okay, cool. And then I'm trying to figure out what can I fit in before work. What can I fit in on the Thursday group ride?
Well, it's good that I was talking to a podcast guest yesterday and we were working on beforehand. We were working on schedules and he's like, okay, well, I'm available these days between this time and this time I work, between this time and this time I exercise. So after this time, mm-hmm. and blah, 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 blah. And it's so regimented.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I'm a take the time guy, not a make the time guy.
Right.
Because it's like... Yeah, like it would just be like, you know what, I'm going to go for a ride. The weather's good. I mean, the other day when I rode, it was raining.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really want to go. It was gray. It was raining. And I'm like, but I went.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the perfect time to go
yeah.
when it's shitty.
Yeah. Right?
And it turned out to be awesome. But it's like, well, if I don't go now.
Then you're not going to.
Then, you know, anyway. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm not going to go or I'm not going to get a ride in this week.
Yeah.
Because I get my kids back and then I got to go here and da da da. Mm-hmm. And it just goes on and on.
Yeah, I have a great crew that we get up and do 5:30 rides in the morning.
So early.
And, goodness. But it's such a great little crew of humans and it's just become a thing that, you know, we try and do that at least 3 times a week. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. So, but what it does is it makes you get up and every single, I've been doing it for years now, but every single morning, like, oh, I don't want to go. And they're going to laugh. Or I'll call myself out for this because I do call in quote unquote sick a little bit more than they do. But every time you go, you feel so much better. And my one riding partner the other morning said, 8 o'clock, Stephen. Knows what's good for 5:30 a.m. Stephen. 8 p.m. Stephen knows what's good for 5:30 a.m. Stephen. But 5:30 a.m. Stephen's going to fight 8 p.m. Stephen.
Yeah.
And it's like, so, but it's true. Like, you know what you need tomorrow, the day before, better than you do when you're laying in your comfy bed.
Right.
So
just plan it.
Yeah, just plan it and listen to your 8 p.m. person, not your 5:30 a.m.
And that's funny too. I go to bed so early now.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, sometimes nine. Like, if I have my kids, put the kids to bed at least by nine, which is late for them. And it's just like, and I'm just like, well, I might as well go to bed.
Yeah.
Because I live in this tiny place. What am I going to do? I can't play the guitar. It's too loud. I can't.
Yeah.
So I might as well just go to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, it's good. And yeah, when you're like, my job is very much an 8 o'clock to 4:30.
Yeah.
So it's like not flexible. So I have to fit it in where I can. Yeah. And I want to spend time with the family in the evening because it's so short.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, after you're done, school? You're done dinner at six. And then it's like, okay, it's time to start winding getting ready down. For bed.
Yeah.
So it just happens so fast.
It does happen fast. It all goes by really fast.
So,
well, before we wrap it up, just one more time. Yep. Lost Elephant.
July 13th at 7 a.m. But the more important part is July 12th, the night before. And that's the night before get together that everyone should come to because it really is the best part. The ride is clearly the best part. But that the night before is the important part where you get to meet everyone and chat with everyone because you don't get to meet everyone out on the course. And there's going to be a barbecue this year, and the prize table is going to be great again, as it always is, thanks to our wonderful sponsors. July 12th is the night before get together, and then July 13th, Friday night, and then July 13th is the actual ride. And yeah, if you want to keep up to date, you will be up to date if you've signed up, but if you want to keep up to date just because you're interested in or whatever, just go sign up on the sign up page on the website, which is lostelephant.ca. I always forget if it's got the in it or not.
.com or .ca.
No, I know the .com or .ca. I don't remember. Yeah, it's lostelephant.ca. So thanks for having me, Steve.
Oh man, it was good for you to come by.
For sure.
I can't wait to ride. So
yeah, so now we're gonna go. It's sunny here in Invermere, sunny and cold. And we're going to go ride bikes.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye.
I want to thank Nathan again for his time and thank all of you for tuning in. You know, I wanted to go back right away and check the results of last year's jumbo because we were talking about how it was dominated by women. If you wanted to listen to that podcast, actually, I did last year. I was hanging out at a resupply and talking to riders as they came in. It was pretty awesome. It was great to catch up with so many familiar faces and new faces and spend some time talking about their experience. They weren't too far in at that point. I think it was maybe 100K in, but a lot happened in that 100K. So it's number 141. So if you go back, myback40.org, actually you can just search Google the 2023 Lost Elephant Jumbo Rider Conversations and you'll get to myback40.org, number 141, and you can check that out. Sorry for my voice. Feeling very morning voice right now. It's all deep. It's always deeper in the morning. I kind of dig it, actually. Maybe I should be doing my intros in the morning. And then, I took a photo because I wanted to talk about the results. Go away. Yeah, I'll zoom in here. So an amazing race and packed with women in the jumbo. So we've got Megan Hakkinen, who finished, how far was it? 500K? Just under 500K, one day, 13 hours, 11 minutes. Zoe, I'm going to mispronounce your name. Chaudelot, I think, French, Dutch. Zoe Chaudelot, and it's a one day, 18 hours, 21 minutes. Nick Edwards sandwiched in there in the top five. One day, 19 hours. Alexandra Burke. One day, 21 hours, and Julia Halwa, who I've had on the podcast just a few back, one day, 22 hours, 13 minutes. So top five in the jumbo. And this, the Lost Elephant, I can't understate this, is a gnarly race. They don't hold any punches. So often there's creek crossings, bushwhacks, walking up over passes. It's these bike packing races here in the Rockies and the Purcells are filled with gnarly terrain, chunder. They're not easy. They're not easy. But they're great races to get into to build the grit that you would need to last over a long haul race like say the BC Epic or the Tour Divide or something longer, of longer length. Because the Tour Divide doesn't offer anything as gnarly as the Lost Elephant Ultra Race, believe it or not. So I just wanted to make note of those women that dominated the top five, going further down the list. Yeah, the rest is just dudes. Just dudes. Jeff Dick, Greg Matthews, Eric Ross, Logan Hurd, Brad Roach, Igor Tsunko. Sorry, dude. Phil Baird, Stephen Cooley, and Mark Hillary. So to have like a race packed like that, all very heavily weighted at the top, dominated by women, it's pretty awesome. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. If you want to support my work, please, you can head on. There's lots of ways to support the podcast. The easiest way is just to give it a 5-star rating and a review, a comment on your favorite listening platform. Helps kind of manipulate the algorithm so I show up more in lists. I'm a very small fish in a very massive ocean of over 2 million, probably pushing 3 million podcasts. So to get any type of traction or to get any ears at all, the ratings and the reviews help a lot. You can support me by buying a t-shirt. You can support me by buying me a coffee with PayPal. You can just PayPal me. If you go head on over to mydoc40.org, you can send me a little bit of a little tip, buy me a coffee or buy me lunch. And then from there, if you want to become a Patreon, you can head on over to mybac40.org/Patreon. Sorry, patreon.com/mybac40. You can head on over there and you can sign up. There's some different levels. If you sign up at the $5 level, you're going to get this podcast early, before it goes public. And if you sign up at the $10 level, you'll be able to get access to the project, the audiobook project that I'm working on, Divide by Two Wheels by Michael J. Devitt. So again, I want to thank you for your support. I want to thank you for lending me your ears. And you know what? Just listening in, I don't plan on putting anything behind a paywall. So just tuning in every week or every 10 days or 2 weeks, because that's what it's been like lately, to just listen and you know, learn from my guests, because you know, that's one of the main drivers for me doing this podcast, is to learn from my guests. And there's so much wisdom to be shared from the men and women that I have on the podcast, and it's definitely fills my buckets, and I hope it fills yours too. All right, guys, that's all I have for you today. So until next time, keep the rubber side down.